Welcome to the Young Wealth Show, where you'll truly learn how to make, spend, and invest money for an awesome life. Get the real-life stuff that wasn't part of your school curriculum. Young Wealth gives you innovative new ways of dealing with your finances, as well as the skills and tools you're going to need to survive and be successful out on your own. Let the Young Wealth Show be your GPS to take you from clueless to clued in. Here is your host, Jason Hartman, with Young Wealth.
Hey, welcome to the Young Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman. This show, of course, is produced by my foundation, the Jason Hartman Foundation, where we talk about business and investing and how you can create a great future for yourself and start out on the right path. We'll be back with a great guest for you in just a moment here on the Young Wealth Show. And be sure to visit our website, youngwealth.com, where we've got a fantastic blog, lots of free resources. Take advantage of that and further your financial education. My pleasure to welcome Katie Kiefer to the show. Katie is a fascinating young lady, and she comes to us today from Minneapolis, and she has spoken at CPAC and is very involved in politics, but also has a background in commercial real estate. So very good focus for the show, and it's just a pleasure to welcome her. Katie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Jason?
I'm fine, thanks. So we are in quite a year here. the political debates have been so interesting. And I think, Katie, we are at a time in history that this next presidential election may be the most critical presidential election in at least a generation. America is very divided, and frankly, rightfully so. You see the government just intruding in so many areas of our lives nowadays. It is really, really amazing. And you know, I have to mention, as we kind of jump into this interview, Katie, that one of my listeners, I remember this email, wrote me an email once saying, stick to economics and investments and real estate and stop talking about politics. But what they don't realize is how inexplicably intertwined politics are to our economic success and freedom and liberty. And you know, it's vitally important.
Right. Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think that a lot of people have kind of developed this notion that you can separate the two, you know, politics. I don't have to get involved in politics, but I can kind of just stick to my own life and do that. And I don't particularly enjoy the dirty side of politics. I don't think anyone does. But the fact is that the issues are important. And so I think that you can be engaged and involved in the issues which impact your business. Any regulation, whether it's Dodd-Frank or the regulations coming out of the SEC, those are all going to impact a small business owner or a large business owner. And so it is beneficial, I think, for people to get involved in just the issue side. But that word politics, I think, kind of scares people because there's so many dirty aspects to politics that people just want to wash their hands of.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense. Katie, in your background, I mean, you're basically in the media business and you do public speaking engagements. And I guess your focus is really on helping young professionals make the right choices and helping them get engaged in public policy and politics. Hate to use the word again, but that's what public policy is. Tell us a little bit more about what you do.
Well, I've always had this passion for the issues and have spent a lot of time reaching out to young people ever since I was in probably high school. And then when I went to college, I decided to start this nonprofit, nonpartisan, but conservative editorial newspaper. And so I got students from all across campus to kind of come together, and they all wrote editorials, and then we published them, and we'd put that out on campus, and it caused a lot of controversy, actually, even though it was a Catholic school, you know, so it was, I guess you could say, more socially conservative. It caused a ton of controversy on campus, particularly with administration, and so, but I realized that by doing that, I was really giving young people a voice, and that's kind of how I got started. And I brought Ann Coulter and some others to campus, and that kind of caused a huge national controversy.
Ann Coulter is controversial? I can't imagine that.
Yeah, you know, sometimes, once in a while, she'll say a few things.
She's the master of the soundbite. I just love how she... The great thing about Ann Coulter is she can get away with saying a lot of stuff a man could never get away with.
That's probably true.
Yeah, I mean, how did you develop your conservative, if that's a fair representation, your conservative beliefs? It's pretty rare at your age for people to think that way.
And I think even more so as a woman, it's rare to have more conservative or libertarian beliefs. And I would say my beliefs today are sort of a blend of conservatism and libertarianism, but just I really developed my beliefs, I think, by kind of just being around my dad. He was a huge talk radio junkie, and when he was home from work, you know, on the evenings and on the weekends, he would always have talk radio on. And at first, it was kind of annoying. I was like, Dad, do we really have to listen to Rush Limbaugh while we're having lunch? And he was like, "Yo, Katie, just listen. You'll learn something." So just growing up with these very intellectual people, kind of like always in the background, even if I wasn't really listening totally, kind of had an impact on me. And then I was just constantly reading. Both of my parents were always encouraging me to read, and I have always enjoyed reading. So just anything I could find, from the cereal box to a textbook, I would just read it. And I think that's how you develop this kind of sense of curiosity about the world. And if you're exposing yourself to truthful materials, I think you'll lean towards conservatism or libertarianism.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And it's interesting that you bring that up, talk radio and really the internet. Some people have dubbed Ron Paul president of the internet.
Sure, yeah.
And one of the interesting things about it is that I published an article, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, talking about two forms of media that I call the monologue media and the dialogue media. And what I mean by that is that if you look at the old media, book publishing, newspapers, network television, that type of media, movies, Hollywood movies, and you look at that type of media, I call that the monologue media. And that media has traditionally been left-wing or liberal, and I think that's because that media doesn't have to engage with its listener or viewer or reader. Now, I know everybody's thinking, well, gee, you know, in the newspaper, there's an editorial and an op-ed page. Of course there is. But the main focus of the old media is a monologue. They broadcast, we listen, okay, or we watch. But the new media, the internet, blogs, talk radio, and talk radio isn't new media, but it leans definitely to the right. And one of the reasons I think this is true, Katie, is because in the dialogue media, your views have to withstand argument. They have to withstand debate. And the leftist views, the big government, those types of views have just been proven over and over and over again throughout the world and throughout history to be invalid. They just simply don't work in practice. And if you were to call into NBC during the Today Show and debate something with Matt Lauer, for example, I don't think their views can withstand debate like the dialogue media can. Your thoughts?
I totally agree with that. And I think that's very appropriate that you would make that distinction and help people to realize that. But I totally agree. And a lot of what you see on the monologue media or the more liberal media, which you were talking about, is the play to emotion. And you see that in a lot of movies, too. I feel like it's hard to find a movie now, even compared to maybe 5 or 7 years ago, that really has a deep plot, because it's so politically correct and it just plays to your emotions so much. And it's kind of frustrating as someone who actually enjoys philosophy and even just reading about financial topics, you know, something that makes your brain think. And I would just relish the fact a liberal media head who would come forward and offer an argument. And I think that Bill Maher and Jon Stewart actually occasionally do that, but then sometimes they get all wrapped up in their kind of emotional appeals, which is a little disappointing that they have to use that aspect to win the argument.
Sure, sure. I will say, though, and I'm sure you've seen it, I love that Jon Stewart clip about Ron Paul.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, I think about, he did one about Occupy Wall Street, too, that was really good. So I think that he's a little bit more intellectual, but, you know, he has to make people laugh, too. So
sure, and that's a pretty big challenge to make people laugh,
yes,
about this
definitely.
Stuff sometimes. You wrote a really interesting article about skyscrapers and about how they're an impetus to create jobs. And when I read this, I couldn't figure out, Katie, if this was an article about commercial real estate or politics at first. And I just found it pretty interesting. Tell us about that article.
Well, I was inspired to write it, I guess, because of my background in commercial real estate. And I noticed that this particular administration is starting to attack businesses, big and small. And one of the things that they're going after, or have been going after, is the carried interest, which currently sits at the capital gains rate of 15%. And that's to incentivize, you know, general partners and developers to kind of put their names on the line and go out there and take that risk and build projects that will create jobs. And so what I tried to do in this particular article is just show people what role the carried interest plays in their daily lives. Even if you're not a commercial real estate person, it's important, I think, to realize that, and this is straight from the U.S. Treasury, that 46% of all partnerships are actually real estate partnerships. And so carried interest plays a huge role in a lot of those, you know, incentivizing developers to take that risk and build huge projects and create jobs. And when the commercial real estate industry is healthy, it can actually account for about a third of U.S. GDP. So those are huge numbers. And so even if you're not directly working in commercial real estate, it's important that this stays healthy. And it's important, I think, to support incentives like carried interest. And ultimately, it would be great if we would just have comprehensive tax reform that would help every industry, you know, not just commercial real estate. But I think it's really unfair that this administration has this kind of laser beam that goes after industries that are perceived as white collar or the industries that help the wealthier people, because it just hurts everyone. You know, it doesn't just hurt the so-called wealthy. It hurts everyone to go after industries like commercial real estate.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that the carried interest is a tax benefit that encourages development, right? Is that
yeah.
What you're... Yeah, okay. And so if that tax benefit goes away under our current ridiculous tax system, and we'll talk about that in a moment maybe, but if that goes away, then you have less development, you have less economic activity, you have fewer jobs, you have fewer purchases, and everything slows down. And I tell you, the Obama administration has been darn good at incentivizing everything to slow down except the growth of government. So very good point. And yeah, so what's the Michael Moore connection?
Well, I use Michael Moore as a lead-in because the thing that really frustrated me too, and that caused me to write this article, is that I kept hearing people in the Obama administration and in the media refer to tax incentives like commercial or real estate carried interest as a loophole. And I think that's just so wrong to think that someone who takes something that's totally legal, you know, you're taking a tax break that is 100% legal, to refer to that as a loophole and to make that person out to be a cheater, that business person who's creating jobs and, you know, putting their name and, you know, life savings on the line to build this, you know, office building or whatever, is just so ridiculous. And it's spreading this message of kind of class division in the society. and that doesn't even exist unless they create that. And so Michael Moore is kind of the king of creating these totally false ideas about capitalism and the wealthy, and kind of, I think, making the middle class have this resentment towards wealthy people, or which they shouldn't have. And so that's kind of why I started it out, having Michael Moore, you know, kind of staring up at a skyscraper and just kind of thinking, wow, those Richies, I just wish I could kind of get rid of them and tear down their tower and destroy them because they're kind of evading the system, and just trying to make it kind of funny in that sense. But it's very true. You know, he just totally distorts capitalism in his videos and in pretty much everything he says. And so I'm just trying to go against that.
I agree with you. And I saw Capitalism, a Love Story. It's the only Michael Moore documentary I've seen so far. And I got to say, though, in concept, I most certainly agree with you. In practice, however, I really question whether Wall Street represents capitalism at all, because Wall Street is nothing more than, you know, a form of corporate socialism or fascism, where you've got the giant corporations are in bed with the government. They're just getting all the favors and everything their way. And granted, I love capitalism. I think it's a lousy system. It's just better than every other system. It's hardly perfect. And I jokingly say it's a lousy system, yeah, just better than every other. But the problem is, when government grows and you have lobbyists for the big corporatocracy that can do things that Main Street, that small business cannot do, we kind of have to ask ourselves how much capitalism is really going on Wall Street. If you want to find capitalism, look at Main Street, look at small businesses, because they don't have the lobbyists. They don't have the favoritism. And obviously, the Obama administration has left them out in the cold pretty much at every turn. That's the only point that I'd just like to make about that. Any thoughts?
Well, I've written also about, you know, the Wall Street traders, and this Obama administration has gone hard against Wall Street traders, and the Department of Justice has actually incarcerated many of them, given them record high sentences of up to 10 years for insider trading, and this is very controversial, partly because the mainstream media, I think, has done such a good job of convincing people that Wall Street is evil. But if you trace it back to how this whole recession started, I think it started with the government, not with Wall Street. You know, the government created these regulations, these bad rules, you know, basically told, it would be like parents giving very lax rules to their children and then blaming the children when, you know, they destroy the house or destroy their own lives. It really would be the parents' fault. And that's what happened here. You know, a lot of traders were just kind of fulfilling or carrying out the rules that the government put in place. And if they didn't play by those rules, then, you know, they would be sunk. And so I blame the government, not Wall Street. And it's just very clear that there's an attack on Wall Street. Wall Street does represent capitalism. You know, as a trader, you're taking on a huge amount of risk, and they're putting all these people in prison for 10 years, 7 years for insider trading, when there are economists and very respected people across the world who have said that there's actually no evidence that insider trading hurts an economy. It could actually help an economy because it's just a form of open trading.
Right, right. And I kind of agree with you there, because there are some places where insider trading is actually legal. And when I was referring to that, I wasn't really referring to people trading on Wall Street. I wasn't getting that specific. I was just generally referring to the fact that Obama sits up there and he acts like he's here to help the little guy, yet the middle class keeps shrinking at every turn. And he's here to stand up for the little guy against big business. But then you look at, like, his Secretary of Agriculture, Monsanto. The corporatocracy is all over the place in government.
Yeah.
And this is the problem. If you want to end government, I'll put it this way. there will always be corruption in government. There will always be corruption in business. It's just the way things are. Human nature will always have that. However, if the government is smaller and the government has fewer rules and fewer regulations, then there are fewer perversions of the system and fewer complexities, and people can just act in the normal capitalistic way they would if government were to just get out of the way as much as possible. And
yeah,
when government
definitely.
Gets big,
I agree with that.
You get special interests, you get government that's in bed with business.
It's easier to defend capitalism and the free markets when it's actually working and hasn't been kind of tainted and destroyed by the government, which it has. And so that's why it's hard even to explain it or to defend it to people, because there are so many corruptions and instances of that, as you were just mentioning.
Sure there are. Well, tell us about some of your talks at colleges and so forth. What are you trying to instill in young adults?
Well, I'm trying to help them understand the economy, I think, first and foremost, issues related to the economy and to their freedom and their future. Because when you're a young person and you're in college, you don't always look 10, 20 years out, and you're not always aware of things that are coming down the pipeline. And so I try to explain in a way that's fun and humorous at the same, lighthearted at the same time, but take on very serious topics and tell them, you know, here's what's happening in our government, here's what's happening in the financial industry. And so if you plan on going out there and, you know, making it, you might want to be aware of these things. And I always encourage them to get involved, because I think it's kind of depressing to walk away from a talk where you hear about a lot of things and you just need to have some real world advice. And so I also, based on my own experience as someone who got involved when I was in college, I try to give them tips on how they can get involved in public policy and the issues and start impacting their long-term future.
Very good points. Any tips for listeners about how they can get involved, what they should do? I know to so many, it seems like the system is just so big and so impervious to change with this two-party system we have, that can you make any real impact?
Yeah, I think you can. And I think it helps if you start with an issue that you individually are passionate about, because that the hardest part sometimes is figuring out where to start. So if you're passionate about, you know, lowering taxes, or if you're passionate about the Second Amendment or whatever, start with that issue and find an organization maybe that you can get involved with. There's so many different nonprofit organizations, and there's also different candidates now that we have the presidential primary, where you can get behind that candidate or you can get involved in that organization, whether it's the NRA or whatever, and you can make a difference. And even if that candidate doesn't become the next president or whatever, you're putting your philosophy out there by moving that person forward and by getting involved in an organization, whether it's an organization that lowers taxes or the NRA or whatever, you know, something that you support. That organization is going to go to Washington and they're going to lobby for you on your behalf. And if you are a writer or a speaker, whatever, start your own blog and put your thoughts and ideas out there, because, or tweet about it, post things on your personal Facebook page so that your friends can see. And the more professional and humorous I think you can be about what you do, the more you're going to draw your friends and family into your way of thinking.
Very good points. Well, Katie, give out your website if you would and tell people where they can learn more.
It's katiekiefer.com, so KATIEKIEFFER.com, and you can follow me on Twitter or Facebook. Everything is right there. I have a column that comes out on townhall.com and my website every Monday, so I'd love for people to check that out and email me if you have comments or questions.
Excellent points. Well, Katie Kiefer, thank you so much for joining us today, and keep up the good work and keep enlightening people and helping them get engaged. It's just really a great thing to see, and I hope we'll see a lot more of it. We really have, with all of the college age interest in Ron Paul as a candidate. And just maybe a closing question for you. Why do you think Ron Paul is so appealing to young people?
Well, one thing that I heard someone say that I totally agree with, and I wish I could remember who they were, but they were talking about how young people are a little bit more pure and less tainted by life, corruption, whether or bureaucracies. And I think that's part of it, because his message is very purist. I guess he tries to follow the Constitution to a T, and his policies that he promotes try to do that as well. And he's, you know, a very electable guy too. He's not just ideological. But I think the fact that they're young helps them, because they're not so tainted by all this politically correct and bureaucratic stuff. So that's number one. But then also, his message is just all about freedom, and what young person or older person, but what younger person isn't in love with freedom and just being able to feel the breeze in their hair, and just like that whole aspect of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. He emphasizes far more than any other candidate by pushing states' rights and just acknowledging that people are adults once they reach, you know, the legal age, and they can make their own decisions with regard to moral or social issues. And he clearly puts his views out there with regard to things like abortion and marriage and things like that. But he isn't a preacher. I think we have a few presidential candidates up there that belong in a church rather than in the White House. And he doesn't tell other people what to think. And that's what young people like, because they can make their own decisions. And he's just a good parental figure. My parents were kind of like that too. I didn't ever have rules with regard to you have to get home at a certain time or whatever, but they raised me in a certain way where I became a very responsible person without having this huge 10-page list of rules that I had to follow. And that's why he appeals to young people, I think.
Sure. Yeah, very good points. And, you know, that's true. The question, like I said to you before we started the show, the interview today, is that I wish Ron Paul would just support Israel and say he's not going to allow Iran to get a nuke because he'd be president. You know, I think he'd be highly electable if he was a little bit less isolationist, which his philosophy is very pure. It's simple. His philosophy is simple. It's uncomplicated. And when you listen to people who worked with him years and years ago, they say he's totally consistent. He hasn't changed. And I think young people pick up on his authenticity. Even if you don't agree with him and you don't like him, you got to admit, the guy's consistent, and he appears to be extremely authentic. However, this is foreign policy. It's just too radical.
Well, people say that, but in my view, he is the one who is really looking out to develop and frame America's foreign policy to suit Israel's best interests. And I say that because he's the only one who comes out and says, you know what, some of the things that we are doing are foreign policy, and how we interact with people in the Middle East, and we give aid to Israel's self-declared enemies. We give billions of dollars of aid to them. We need to think about those things, and just, you know, saying that we support Israel doesn't do much for Israel. We need to take real actions, and some of that is to kind of back off of the aid that we're giving to their enemies, and also to stop getting involved in all of these conflicts that I think are making, you know, other groups in the Middle East hate us and hate Israel, because they feel like Israel is our kind of pet or whatever. And if we just got a little bit less involved, that would probably help Israel. And that's what he's trying to say. And a lot of people who have these kind of armchair warriors who want to go to war with everyone, but they've never gone to war themselves, which is very hypocritical. The troops support Ron Paul, and that says so much too, because they're the ones over there. They're the ones who have the experience. And here we're listening to all these guys, these talking heads, who literally have never picked up a weapon. They've never gone overseas. They've never spent, you know, a week away from their family doing anything risky. And they're telling us to go to war. That's a little bit yet.
No question about it. You're absolutely right. And one of the things that's happening is that there's too much incentive in the military-industrial complex. There's too much money being made. And if we just get out of everybody's business and stop imposing our will and risking the lives of our troops and spending ourselves into complete and absolute bankruptcy by doing that, you know, I think we'd kind of find that people would be a lot less angry at us.
For sure.
We might they find would. That if we just stop interfering quite so much, I'm not saying to completely get out of the world, we've got to be somewhat engaged, but a lot less engaged than we are, certainly. I think sometimes just stepping back is really the best policy.
Yeah, definitely. And Paul, I think his son Rand, if people listen to him, when he explains Paul's philosophy, he does a really good job, as we were talking about, you know, before the show started. And sometimes I think Paul gets so passionate about what he thinks because he has been kind of saying the same thing for 30 years. And it's like after 30 years, people are finally starting to listen to him. And I think that's why he sometimes comes across as pent up or frustrated, because he's like, oh, I've already explained this, you know, so many times. But his son is a little bit more relaxed when he explains things. But the CIA has talked about things like blowback, and there's, you know, Paul always cites the CIA documents, the DOD documents, and the 9/11 report when he backs up his foreign policy. And so I decided to actually go and look at all of those materials. And if you do read through those materials, you'll find that they do support Paul's philosophy. And so his foreign policy views, I mean, not his philosophy, though, his foreign policy views are highly rooted in documents that our best professionals, the guys who've been tracking or who've tracked bin Laden for 7+ years, they're telling us our engagement in the Middle East, our behavior towards Israel, that is hurting Israel and that's hurting us, and it's just going to blow back on us. And so that's where he's coming from. He's not just kind of making this up because he's a pacifist or whatever.
Right, right. Well, good points. It's katiekiefer.com. And Katie, again, thank you so much for joining us today, and keep up the good work out there.
Thank you very much. Great talking to you, Jason. Good luck to you as well.
Copyright the Hartman Media Company. For publication rights and interviews, please email media@jasonhartman.com. This show offers very general information concerning real estate for investment purposes. Opinions of guests are their own. Jason Hartman is acting as president of Platinum Properties Investor Network exclusively. Nothing contained herein should be considered personalized, personal, financial, investment, legal, or tax advice. Every investor's strategy and goals are unique. You should consult with a licensed real estate broker or agent or other licensed investment, tax, and/or legal advisor before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed. Please call 714-820-4200 and visit www.jasonhartman.com for additional disclaimers, disclosures, and questions.